Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Ready.
Hello and welcome to this. It is the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the most praised, the most brilliant, the most consistent, and the longest running rugby podcast on planet Earth. It doesn't just feel that way, it actually is. I am JB, in studio with Phil. Hello, Philip.
Hello, JB. How are you doing?
I'm very well, thank you. And down the line, Tim Cocker.
Evening, gents.
Good evening, Tim.
That was a wonderful intro, JB.
Yeah, I just made it on the spot. Just completely made that up.
It sounds very professional.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it's great to make those statements, and they're, well, mostly actually correct.
Well, that one of the statements is correct. One of the statements is correct.
I wouldn't want to be brazenly making statements, writing checks that we couldn't cash.
Oh, I'm God, sure no.
That's not the sort of thing we do. If other podcasts want to do that, that's up to them.
Exactly right. How is everyone? What a lovely weekend.
Unbelievable weekend. It's been delightful in South Manchester, but I imagine the man whose carbon footprint is about the same as the Icelandic volcano would like to tell us how his amazing bank holiday weekend has been.
Yes, Tim ExxonMobil Cocker, tell me all about your weekend.
Well, first and foremost, it involved two live games of rugby with crowds, which was wonderful. The AJ Bell Stadium on Friday night, Sandy Park on Sunday, and in between, yeah, a drive from Manchester to Kent, from Kent to Devon, and now from Devon back to Dorset, where I'm sat in a motorhome. I've been sat in an orchard in Devon in a motorhome, and now we're parked just on the coast in Dorset. It's absolutely idyllic. Wonderful.
I imagine an orchard in Devon produced some pretty good scrumpy down there.
Mm, yeah, you
delicious.
Bet. You bet. Mm. Yeah, I got the after hours stuff as well. The farmer came and offered some apple juice to the kids, and then something a bit stronger for me a bit later.
Awesome. Excellent.
Awesome. Yeah, very nice.
Yeah, so I've been to Abasoch this weekend, a place that I always say I won't go because that's where everyone who earns over 55 grand goes on holiday. From Cheshire, I might add. And actually, I think I've got that number wrong. I think I've got the number very wrong, because when I was there this weekend, I walked through a caravan park called The Warren, and the wealth on display is unbelievable down there. It is. I only walked through it. It felt like, do you know one of those...
Were people like hustling you along? Keep moving.
Yeah, holding their nose. Come on, move along. The beaches there are amazing. I've got to say, they are amazing. And then I emptied the fish of mackerel. Absolutely destroyed the whole mackerel population of Abasoch.
Awesome. Do you cook some mackerel?
I did. Cooked on the barbecue.
Delicious.
Jay, can you just say Abasoch? You say it again? I love it.
Abasoch.
I love that.
Yeah, I don't like speaking. I don't speak Welsh. So there.
You like to put that hard K at the end of Abasoch.
Abasoch. No. right. I guess there's... actually, Phil, have you been anywhere?
No. Mm. I have mostly been in my back garden in South Manchester.
Oh, lovely. Lovely. But you've got a lovely back garden.
How's Pondgate and all the rest of it coming on at the minute in your back garden?
The ponds are well and truly gone. The football pitch, the turfing has been done. I've built myself a nice little raised bed in the back section. I've got like we're back onto woodland, so it was part of the woodland that the previous owners kind of enclosed. Which is former woodland and also former tip. So there is like a chance of hydrocarbons and asbestos and all sorts of other nasties back there. Phil, I built myself a raised bed.
Phil's house used to be owned by a botanist, an actual botanist, not one of the guys who works at the chain bar mixing cocktails. And so he's got like all this weird woodland, and well, when he moved in there, like piles of logs, several different ponds at different levels doing different things, like lots weird
of,
stuff.
Yeah, lots of birdhouses and multiple areas that have been specifically created to harbour wildlife. And my wife has just decided to bulldoze the whole thing.
Yeah. Well, I want turf. I want turf, God damn it.
Just a black top. Just,
yeah. Do you know one thing I really want to do, just very quickly? I greatly appreciate that the fact we are the longest running rugby podcast means that we've managed somehow, by hook or by crook, to build up a following, which we're very, very, very grateful for. But there are a lot of other people who, you know, are starting out or at various stages in their journey. So I just want to throw a very quick spotlight onto one. One of our friends of the pod, a long-time listener, Eddie Stevens. I've been listening to his podcast recently. It's so much fun.
He's a funny guy. I was on his 100th episode the other week.
Yes, you were. That was really good, actually. And I listened to his latest episode, and I thought he is we are the longest running. The accolade that Eddie Stevens can boast is he is the only one man rugby podcast
from a shed.
Wow.
From a shed. And it's, well, if you have an extra half hour or hour in your week and you're looking for some more rugby to fill it with, I just thought I'd throw a little mention his way, because I think he's been doing some genuinely brilliant stuff lately.
Well,
awesome.
Why don't we take the theme of genuinely brilliant stuff and talk about Sail Sharks this
week.
That was an awesome performance by Sail.
I'm going to put this out there. That is the best Premiership game I have seen maybe since the podcast has started. It was that good.
It was a hell of a game. It was a hell of a performance from Sale. I genuinely didn't think they would do it. I thought they could do it, but I didn't think they would do it.
I thought they would.
Yeah, you were very confident that they would do it.
I was not that confident. I don't know, actually.
I think I called a Sale win.
You
did. I didn't.
You both called Sale wins.
Yeah.
They were unbelievably good.
And so they really were. And it wasn't like Bristol weren't trying. Like, Bristol threw everything they had. Bristol threw their driving maul. They threw the narrow stuff. They threw the wide stuff in.
Mm.
One of the most impressive things was Sale shut down Bristol's wide attacking game, but they didn't shut it down every time.
No.
Three times, Bristol got round the outside of Sale from going wide early and off turnovers. Twice, once with Randrandra down the right wing, once with Pietau down the left wing, and Sale managed to get back and snub both of those two out, and it was only the one with the bounce pass that Malins picked up that ended up in a Bristol try.
Yes. But, yeah. Well, that seemed to me that was where the space was, and when Bristol was successful, they were pulling the ball back very heavily from a pod of forwards. There's a few things that surprised me about Bristol, and they sound counterintuitive, but one was how physical that they were. I thought they were mighty physical.
But they've had that all season, and actually people often overlook that, because the tries that make the highlight reels are Randrandra and Pietau going round the outside and the offloading game. But their driving maul has been as good as anyone's this season.
Exactly. They are. I mean, they stood up. They stood up well. They looked like they were standing up well. It's hard to say. But then what shocked me is how quickly they started shipping points. And I know those two things do sound like they don't sit well together, but that's exactly what we saw.
It is, and it's... So there is definitely something of Saracens circa 2015 in that Sale performance.
100%.
The fact that they were so comfortable to give the ball away. They were so... Like, even off turnover ball. Turnover ball is golden. And Sale were incredibly happy through McGinty or Faf, particularly in that first half, to take turnover ball, play one phase, and then just kick it for the corner. And I'll put the pressure onto Bristol to play out.
Yeah.
And Bristol put pressure on themselves by trying to do so, playing their all-court game. But the pressure got seeped onto Bristol because Sale's defence was so well organised and worked so hard.
And that's what was so surprising about it, because I think most people would have thought at half-time, 0-0, by the way, like, what a game for a 0-0.
Yeah.
But most people would have thought at half-time, wow, what a massive defensive effort from Sale. And I think even Paul Deakin in the first half when he was spoken to during commentary. They cut to the Sale coach and he said, yeah, we can't defend like this for 80 minutes. Yes, they can defend like that for 80 minutes.
Incorrect.
That was the most incredible thing.
Yeah, and I was actually certain that Sale, because Sale had to work so hard, and they did. They worked, I mean, the Currys, everyone on the team, but the Currys and AJ
Currys
McGinty
were
stood like
AJ McGinty,
his work ethic to cover a cross, and it was so good. I was certain that Sale would, they would get to 50, 60 minutes and would just crumble. And
the dam would burst, yeah.
Yeah, and when Bristol scored that try after whatever it was, 45, 50 minutes, I thought, right, this is it. This is where Bristol get their tails up and Sale, they can't keep it up. And it actually was totally the reverse. Bristol had to work so hard to get the territory in possession and they kept on being repelled by Sale. It looked like it was Bristol who were exhausted and Sale who were buoyed by that performance.
Yeah. I'm just trying to get this right now. The players I felt just were different level. So I've said for a couple of weeks now, I don't think Sanderson has improved the players. I don't think he's improved the top players. But what he has done is brought through lads who are now contributing week in, week out. Cam Neill to be one. Connor Doherty. I mean, you know, what a player he's turned out to be.
Who's Connor Doherty?
Or Connor Doherty. I don't know if it's Doherty or Doherty. It doesn't matter, really, does it?
Same.
But actually, there are some players now who are really starting to kick on. AJ McGinty looks just world-class. I mean, he looks like he is spoiling for the fight all the time. And one of the interesting things which I found out this week in the Sale press day was I mentioned that AJ McGinty is doing Wim Hof every morning.
Yeah.
Wim Hof?
Yeah.
Cold shower. Cold showers.
Cold showers.
Ice cold showers.
Sounds insane. So I asked about this. And so he's doing Wim Hof. So this last week, Sale, they walked up a mountain.
That did get mentioned one or two times, including by you, Cocker, in your Man of the Match questionnaire.
At 1 a.m. they left. They got to Snowdon for 1 a.m., didn't they?
Yes. And then they walked up the Snowdon with ex-Special Forces.
Deprived of senses because they couldn't see.
Couldn't see. No torches.
No torches.
So this is what I didn't get, right? It's very interesting. Again, Alex Sanderson, he seems to be really growing into that role. And that's a daft thing to say because he came up with such hype. But I feel like he's getting really very established now. And you can see that rubbing off on how they're playing and the things that they're doing. The upshot of all this is, AJ McGinty, for example, wakes up in the morning and is just absolutely dedicated to his craft. And it's like they're building the project from the ground up, from individuals onwards. So he gets up and he wants to be 5% better every single day. And you can see that. The other guy who just looks, I can't believe I'm saying this, but he just looks brilliant for that style of rugby, Marland Yard. I mean, Marland Yard is such a demon of a kick chaser. Who knew?
His kick chase was amazing. He put in one hit. I can't remember who it was on.
Just tracking people down, making the tackles stick. It could have been Johan Lloyd.
The one thing where Marlon Yard did get caught out was there's once or twice when Bristol did find the outside edge was because he overchased inside. He chased an inside shoulder and left like two men out on his outside and turned his back. So he found himself in no man's land. But his kick chase was amazing. I mean,
imagine sitting down with the Harlequins lads and saying, you'll never guess what Marlon Yard's great at now. What kick chase and just absolutely works his tail off.
Yeah, work ethic.
His work ethic's unbelievable.
Amazing.
I just want to come back to, because I think you cracked open that element of the press conference, didn't you, JB? You sort of opened up that whole chat that ended up happening.
Yeah.
Because I know that in our preparation for the game on Friday night, the producer was chatting to me and he said, oh, I imagine JB's already told you, but a press conference was really interesting. Have a watch. Here's the link. So watched it. And Alex Sanderson, just to fill in a little bit, basically he was talking at length about, you know, one thing that isn't covered by a salary cap and you can actually have an improvement upon is the mental side of it, and not just from a pure sports psychology point of view, but from, I mean, basically mindfulness type stuff, isn't it?
I'm so torn on this because I know it's not a thing, but it is a thing, isn't it? Has to be. Look at how they're playing.
The placebo effect is a thing. I.e., if you tell people they're taking sugar pills, if you tell people they're taking limitless drugs, but they're just sugar pills, it will have an effect.
Russ Roberts said something really interesting. The economist on the Econ Talk podcast is, how do you become a nice person? And he goes, well, first of all, you need to pretend to be a nice person. I think he's right. It's the same sort of principle. Like, just pretend to be dedicated. And before you know it, you're saying all the right things. And the Dupree's, that's another one. They haven't been that great of late. I thought on Friday night they were world class.
Yeah.
World class at what they did.
Evidently. But the Dupree's are both now being talked up. Jean-Luc and Dan talked up for South Africa squad spots.
One of them, I'd say.
Yeah, you'd expect. Because, I guess maybe both of them. Because if Lude is out, potentially, they might need a second row.
They might do, yeah. That's definitely on the cards. I would say that what the Dupree's do almost better than anyone else I've ever seen is deal with people physically.
It's just be massive.
They just dealt with Nathan Hughes.
Yeah.
Now, there are some weaknesses to their game, like their unbelievable offloading game, not in a good way. They can cause errors, but actually their just physical dominance on the game line is incredible. When they get going, it is incredible. But the other problem with them, in my opinion at least, is when that physical dominance isn't available to them, like against La Rochelle, they're not as effective, are they? As in they don't have a plan B.
I mean, yeah, against La Rochelle, say we're just getting marched back the whole game.
Mm.
So I'm not sure anyone, if you'd put any one player in the world into that Sale team at that point in time, I don't think anyone would have had a Pick-em-alls in his prime, Kieran Reid. Like, it's not happening because they were just, La Rochelle was so dominant.
Just on Sale, Tim, did you hear a bit about the masculinity part or the macho part?
I didn't hear that part. I will admit, I didn't watch the whole thing. I sort of skimmed it.
Okay. So there's a bit, and I'm very torn on this, where I asked Alex Anderson whether he's trying to, because he's using a psychologist at the moment with the players. They are doing all the mindfulness stuff, and the idea...
Cold showers and all that.
Cold showers, but also it's to, you know, basically not de-machoing it, but I think they don't like the idea of it being a big macho sport. You've got to talk about your feelings and talk about how, you know, there's lots of stuff like that. But then, do you not think going up a mountain with no torches is the most macho, with special forces, is pretty macho?
yeah, you are absolutely right. And certainly, that was an unbelievably macho performance
that they put in
over that 80 minutes on Friday night.
It was.
Now, Sanderson said that I misconstrued that because it is all about getting the lads into a vulnerable position. But isn't that literally what being macho is? You put yourself in dangerous, vulnerable positions because you are indeed macho. Like, risk-taking.
Well, there's the opening up and being vulnerable, i.e. talking about your feelings and that kind of stuff, is different to swimming with sharks, where you are incredibly vulnerable to be eaten by a shark.
Very macho, though, isn't it?
It is very macho. No,
like, I watched a man chase away a bear this week. Now, he was vulnerable. He was incredibly vulnerable. But it's also very macho, isn't it?
It is, yes.
Yeah, and another element that he was talking about that I found interesting was in training, he's just trying stuff out. And I think that's what I really liked about hearing him talk about it, is that he's trying a lot of things. Some of them will work and they might keep them. A load of them probably won't work and they'll just cast them aside, but they're trying things. And one of the things is when players are absolutely knackered in the moment, immediately finishing a certain part of the inning, they're getting the coaches in to go, right, what are you thinking right now? What are you feeling right now? And like, so that the players don't have any time to process.
Yes.
And I think trying to get just raw and honest and immediate feedback on stuff that they can, and then the coaches might be able to use and translate into, oh, maybe we need to do a bit more of this and that and the other. It might come to nothing, but
do you know what that's called, Tim?
Saying we're exploring all the different ways of, what's it called?
It's called, so do you know this way Samson said it? He said it quite pointedly, hot debrief.
Hot debrief.
Hot debrief, right?
Which is what they do. They do it a lot in Super Rugby.
Yeah.
But not to the same extent. They often interview the players as they're walking off at half time.
Yes.
And they're knackered and trying to give an interview.
Right, so I'll tell you what the hot debrief is. As I understand it, and there'll be military people out there who do understand it properly, and they can write in and tell us why we're wrong.
Okay.
This is what it's... So Stuart Hooper said this. He gets his coaches together and they have a hot debrief there and then. So Stuart Hooper does it. That's where I heard it first. And obviously because Stuart Hooper said it, I immediately tossed it aside and disregarded it as pseudoscience. I was wrong to do that. Because the idea is you get everyone in the heat of the moment, like Tim says, to discuss what you think you've seen. And then you match it up with what you see later on to see, are you having a realistic picture of what just happened? And can you get better at recognising things in the heat of the moment?
So that is really interesting, particularly when you think back to, and one of the things that we've raised an issue many, many times is England rugby actually identifying what's going wrong in the heat of the moment.
Mm.
Yes.
Now, I'm not saying that this tactic will necessarily work, but that is a repeated failure of England to identify where they are failing in games.
Yeah.
And they almost need to like step away and correct it at a later date.
So the reason I think it's of limited use is I can think of a situation where if I put myself in a hot debrief, where are you going wrong with this activity, whether it be CrossFit or grappling or rugby or anything? And the danger I see with it is you might come to the right answer. And for instance, if I was playing a game of rugby and I'm like, we're getting overpowered and I'm looking at our players and we don't have the answer to this within our team, well, what do we do now? We're now completely demoralised.
But then you should be able to say, well, what alternative strategy can I employ?
There is no alternative.
Well, to kick them and start moving around, for example.
Yeah.
If they've got a pack who are 2 stone per man heavier than you, you want them running their arse off. You've got to rope-a-dope. You've got to keep them moving the whole time.
I think a professional rugby team perhaps has different options.
But
perhaps.
JB, you are a great rugby intellect. You as coach and
player. My intellect, I'm looking at you guys, and I can tell you right now, there is no plan B. you're not good enough. You're not good enough to implement plan B. So let's do more of the same and try a bit harder.
Am I the only person that's hearing hot debrief and it sounds quite rude?
it's true.
When you first mentioned that, Tim, I thought of a book I read last year called Endure, which was all about the kind of art and science of endurance. And one of the things they did was basically trying to test muscles to failure, so test athletes to failure. One of the ways they did this that I'm not going to talk about now was putting electrodes onto muscles until they could go no more.
What?
But the other one of the tests they did was they would get cycleists to cycle until they can cycle no more.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they think the test is over because they've stopped cycling, they will offer them $500 if they can go for another minute, and they could always go for that extra minute.
Wow.
So there's this, what's it called? It's called the curious elastic limits of human performance. And it is this, your brain tells you to stop even when your body can't.
Your mind
stop.
Will give up before your body does.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. So that's what I thought you were going to talk about, and getting over that psychological speed limiter restriction.
Well, that's
on yourself.
Probably next week, next off season at Sail Sharks, they'll be all over that, I'm sure. Can I just say, before we depart this game, got to talk about Bristol. Firstly, the two directors of rugby, how similar they are. They talk about love and all these sort of things. We talk about they're deep thinkers, they try things, come at it from different angles. But I have never seen, after a game, I haven't seen Pat Lamb. There was a look in his eyes. He was saying, it's fine, and I'm sure he will come away from that, and that's how we think. But in the moment, I think he looked a bit shell-shocked. I could see a little bit in his eyes that I thought he's a bit nervous about. He's a bit scared. I just haven't seen that look from Pat Lamb before.
I think you're right.
I think you're exactly right, and I can understand why, because they're going into the top four. They know two of the teams who are going to be in the top four are Sale, who have this in their locker, and Exeter, who also have this kind of performance, this level of physicality, the consistency, the defence in their locker. And coming up against that and falling short in the way they did this week will be tough, because as much as the team and Pat Lamb do say, trust the processes and it will work, if you're getting beat like this, there's not that much you can trust the processes.
Yeah, well,
your processes might come short.
That's the hot debrief. I kind of think that the problem that Bristol had was they were hell-bent on beating Sale on the gain line, for large parts of it, and then they went wide. And I think they really wanted to establish their dominance going forward before they whipped it wide. And I think maybe they should just whipped it wide. They should have tried their luck. I mean, Radranda was pretty well contained for the most part, as was Pietau. But they did have success when they pulled the ball back. And then you've got to make that sail defence run, instead of 5 yards forward, 10 yards forward, and then sideways. So that's what I would have tried. And I said it last week in the predictions that this will be a good loss for Bristol, because it'll be a... It's not... They didn't lose because they played badly. They lost and they played brilliantly. And they'll learn, you know, you need an extra gear of either physicality or you need to solve the problem.
They will learn from this, I firmly believe. One thing that they or one player that they did miss. So, obviously losing Morahan in the first 2 minutes doesn't necessarily help, albeit you've got a pretty able deputy coming in Johan Lloyd. The guy that they miss is Luatua.
Yes.
Because in his place, obviously, Ben Earl and Fitzharding are great, but they are both pretty lightweight. And Luatua just does everything. He does the hard yards. He can carry. He can run the line out. He can do the defensive work. And he is a big lump as
he's
well.
He's there, John O'Ross.
Probably even more important than John O'Ross.
Maybe.
He's Luatua is huge for them. And I do believe he's paid huge as one of their most
enormous amounts.
Yeah.
Enormous amounts of money.
Deservedly.
Yeah. Well, it looks like they'll still end up first, and that Sale will probably still end up in third, because Exeter played pretty well.
Now, I only watched I watched about the first 45 minutes of this.
Did we have a man on the ground?
We did have a man on the ground. We had Tim Cocker at Sandy Park.
Yeah, we certainly did. And that was an absolute beatdown. And, well, just before, let's very briefly, before we segue into this, because I think it's relevant, just mention that Francis Barron was on the front page of the rugby paper this weekend, saying that he will, and he is the, what, chief exec?
He's nothing anymore, is he?
No, former chief exec. Yeah. So his advice to the 65 RFU councillors, he said, unless they come up with an absolute good reason why there should be ring fencing for a further 3 years, he says that the vote should absolutely be to reject it. And I think this game is a really good example of what rugby will look like occasionally if you allow ring fencing to happen. Now, ring fencing isn't the reason why this specific game was like this, because Newcastle aren't in danger of being relegated, even if league points were a factor, because Worcester are so far adrift. That's not the point. However, this is just the kind of mismatch we would see, and you will see, and we cannot afford to see in our game, because this was a dreadful mismatch.
So, yeah, I do think you're right on the fact that it would have happened anyway. Worcester so far adrift that, in a way, having a really bad team in the Premiership is exactly the same as ring fencing. So that would be a thing that happens. The Francis Barron point, I think I need to understand it a little bit more. It sounds to me as if Newcastle haven't spent enough money on their squad and they rotated heavily. That's what it sounds like to me. It's just a complete disparity in the two teams and what they can field. And also, Exeter in front of their crowd, maybe they put 30 points on someone. Not this amount of points, though.
Yeah, there is something in... It is a weakened Newcastle team, and it's near enough, not quite, but near enough a full-strength Exeter team. But Newcastle have nothing to play for, so even if they've put their absolute best team out, if they've got nothing to play for, if there is no point in them being there and they're thinking about the beers on the bus journey back, it could be 50 or 60 anyway.
Well, they do, over the season, technically have something to play for, because if they win their last two games, which are home to Worcester next Saturday and on Saturday, and are away to Quinn's final day of the season, and they might be sort of banking on the fact that Quinn's might be resting players ahead of a playoff semi-final. And that might not be a smart... That might be quite a smart move to make. If they win both those games, they could sneak top eight. So I understand why they went, do you know what? Let's just write this game off. But, I mean, that aside, Exeter, man, they're looking in ominous form at the minute.
So it was described by one of the Newcastle players that it was like chasing shadows. Like, they didn't get beaten up as such. They just a second late round around the corner, and then everyone starts panicking, and Exeter were just playing bloody good rugby.
Yeah, they were just picking the gaps, and they can do it whichever way they want. They can have Jacques Vermaelen and Dave Ewers and Yannis Kirsten and like smashing up the middle or making the hard yards, and they've got Sladey and O'Flaherty and Hogg coming off the bench. Cordero, Cuthbert looking good. Cuthbert, he's looked great every time he's been fit and played this season. Just running and on, rings around
And on Cuthbert, there's something about that club that I absolutely love, and they are probably the best example of an organisation that is a club, not a team, not an organisation. They're just a club. They just feel so traditional. And every single time I go down to Exeter, I come away just feeling like reinvigorated a little bit more. I love rugby a little bit more.
You feel a little bit like an outsider.
They're so special. Yeah, they're such a special club. But what I loved and what I really noticed, did Alex Cuthbert score the second or third try, I think? I can't remember.
Yeah,
anyway.
Yeah.
One of them. The way that, bearing in mind he's leaving in a few weeks' time.
Is he? Where's he going?
He's going back to Wales.
Is he really?
I want to say Cardiff, yeah. But I could be wrong.
I don't think it's been finalised exactly where he's going. I'm not. Okay. Might be Osprey. I don't know. But he's going back to Wales. But the way that the whole team, how happy they were that he'd scored, and the reaction of the whole squad, and the way if you go back and watch it again, you don't get that at other clubs. It's so rare and special, and I absolutely love it. I absolutely love that club.
And Cuthbert's an interesting one because I want to say talent identification, but Cuthbert is a lion. He's not talent identification because he's got the talent, but
talent reclamation, isn't it?
Well, yeah, reclamation or utilization, because a few years ago, so his international career basically was finished by the Elliot Daly try in the corner that won England Wales about 3 years ago, I want to say, maybe 4 years ago, where he kind of overchased a kick and then didn't read the wide pass to Elliot Daly on the drift around the outside of him. I think he's barely played international since then. And he was almost in the rugby wilderness, and Exeter have recognised that talent. And then when he has been fit, they've utilised him in the right way.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I don't know why he'd want to go back to Wales unless he thinks that he's in with a shot of internationals again. But he must be in his 30s now.
31, yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't seem likely. Here is a player for you who is out of contract. I had no idea. I've not watched any Pro 14, so I don't know if he's played. He might have been injured. I don't know. But Scott Williams is leaving the Ospreys.
I've always liked Scott Williams.
I think he was hard
done by in the last, well, probably the last two or three years of Gatland, where he just seemed to fall out of favour.
Yeah, I don't know what, like I say, I don't know why he's leaving. I don't know if he's played well. I don't know if he's injured. I know absolutely nothing about the situation. But as for a big name who a Premiership club may well be interested in, that would be one of them. Hey, there's two tangential stories to these two teams this weekend. Do you want to get into them? Let's get into the good one first.
I'll just say, watching the Exeter, I think there's a good shout that most of their backline that started at the weekend that aren't already involved in international rugby could well get call-ups and would justify call-ups. The 9, 10, 11, 12 of Exeter, basically. Jack Maunder, Joe Simmons, Ollie Devoto, Tom O'Flaherty.
Mm. Yes. I agree with all that.
All very good shouts for a squad place of some description.
Yes. I'd like that. And then I can't remember where I read it, but there was some headline that Maunder is very happy to be in the middle of a Simmons sandwich with him playing nine and the two Simmons boys playing 8 and 10.
I'd be quite happy there.
Delighted.
Yeah, it's good. But yes, I'm going to lead into this. No, go on, Jay. So, let's get into these two stories. Go on.
So there's two stories. Let's do the good one first.
Yeah.
Eddie Jones this summer is going to coach his own attack, allegedly.
Mm.
Because at some point, he's going to bring in somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is a part of Eddie Jones which I like, if he gets it right, which is the constant rotation of coaches to keep it all fresh. So if you think about this, like, every time the England players show up, they've got a new attack coach, but then Eddie is the constant. I think that is actually a really unique way to go. I mean, whether it's right or not, I don't know, but it's unique, and I like that.
It's definitely unique. I like it, but then I'd probably want a bit more consistency as you go into the big tournaments.
Yeah. So 2 years out now, it's probably not a bad,
bad
time to do it.
Perfect timing.
So one of the names floating around is Dave Wilder.
Yeah.
And I am a huge fan of Dave Wilder. In fact, I actually went as far as to say that if they got rid of Eddie using his break clause like I would have a few months ago, I would have bought in Dean Richards. And a large part of that is because he'd bring in his own people, and that would have included Dave Wilder.
Dave Wilder. Yeah.
So, you know, maybe Dean Richards doesn't go, but hey, Dave Wilder will, or might do. Mm-hmm. The other candidates, of course, will be Ali Hefa.
Yeah.
And I forgot his name again. The guy in Northampton who's doing wonderful things.
Vesty?
Sam Vesty. Twice I've forgotten his name. Unbelievable. So what do you think of those names?
As bringing them in for a tech coach rather than bringing them in as the...
Yes.
Yeah, based on what I know about them, I'd be very happy with any of those three appointments, Wilder, Vesty or Hefa.
Yeah, I think Wilder shades it for me, although Vesty is interesting.
Vesty is an interesting one, and that Northampton, when they're good, are amazing, but Northampton, when they're bad, are just dreadful. Dreadful.
So I was having a chat with a player 2 or 3 years ago now, and it was a Worcester player. I can't remember who it was for the life of me, but he was saying that Sam Vesty is absolutely awesome. Mm. He is a complete and utter rugby attack geek, and that's why Northampton picked him up. And now he's only going to get better working with Chris Boyd.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So he's a really interesting one. But does he play in a certain way, and that is a certain way? It seems to me Wilder's a little bit more pragmatic, and then Hefa. Well, if you take Hefa out of Exeter, I wonder if that's almost as serious as taking Baxter out of Exeter.
Yeah, it can't be as serious as taking Baxter out of Exeter, but it'd be interesting to see how they recover, as in who they bring in and what they do. Because that would be a hell of a job for a young attack coach
Tim?
Yeah, I like all of those names. I've got a lot of time for Ali Hefa. And I think... He is the obvious heir apparent. He is now Exeter head coach.
Yeah,
as Rob Baxter stepped up to director of rugby. So should Rob Baxter ever want to step aside or move on for any reason, then Ali Hefa would take that. However, I think if Rob Baxter ever got the England job, Ali Hefa, I think the two of them come as a job lot.
It's quite sad, isn't it, when you think about it, because it's almost inevitable that one of those two is going to have to leave Exeter at some point.
It's got to happen at some point, but it depends what circumstances it is, doesn't it? And if they are set up in the right way, like, I mean, let's ignore the Saracen salary cap issues, but the number of coaches who've come into and out of Saracens, and Saracens seem, other than the salary cap issues, no worse or no weaker, despite losing guys like Farrell, Borthwick, Sanderson.
The one you missed there, mate. Venter,
yeah. Eddie Jones was there at a point in time.
You say Borthwick?
Yeah, Borthwick.
Yeah.
Gustard as well.
Gustard? Yeah.
Yeah.
And they just kind of... Yeah, it depends, isn't
it? If it's set up in the right way, I think the graveyards are full of indispensable men.
I hate that saying. I hate it because it just cuts the bone.
It's so true. It's so true.
Yes, it is.
So that's one of the stories.
And the other one is people are determined to take medical advice from Henry Slade. So who are these idiots?
Before we get into this, if you watch the entire programme on BT Sport on Sunday, you will have noticed precisely zero mentions of this. As soon as this broke earlier in the week and I knew I was working this game, I had a slight sinking in my tummy thinking, I really hope there isn't a producer or someone who says, right, we've got to tackle this big story. We've got to talk about it. Because as far as I was concerned, it's got nothing to do with my job or at Sandy Park on Sunday. So I was going to, and I was prepared to say, I'm not doing that. I'm not asking about it. And the same goes, there was never any pressure. It was never suggested when he got the man of the match that I should bring it up. And I absolutely would not. So I was really pleased and glad that it got absolutely no coverage. during the 3 hours of rugby on Sunday.
Yeah, I mean, I would just suggest it is a little bit more complex on a lot of sides. For a start, he brought it up. Right? He actually brings this up. There's two reactions which baffle me. Number one is...
Oh, just in case anyone has been on another planet, what, just recap.
Oh, yeah. So the story itself is Henry Slade says he's not convinced by the evidence of the vaccine.
Yeah.
Which I think is a fair comment. I am convinced, but he's not.
Yeah.
So the way you convince someone who's not convinced about the evidence is show them some evidence. That would be...
not at him and tell him he's murdering grannies.
Exactly right. You don't shame someone into taking a vaccine. You tell them the evidence.
Well, to me, the curious part about that is that, I mean, he was called an anti-vaxxer. The people saying that if he doesn't take a vaccine, he might kill grannies who have taken a vaccine. That sounds pretty anti-vax.
That is anti-vax,
well.
Yeah. the vaccine's not...
Do they not work? Do you not think they work? What's going on here?
Exactly. So the other approach to this, which blew my mind, was that the Telegraph somehow did something wrong. You're sitting in front of a current in the England international, and he tells you up front he's not going to take the vaccine. Kate Rowan never asked him what's she to do? Of course she reports that. What a stupid take that she should edit it out for some reason.
I think she handled it exactly right.
Apart from getting stuck into it afterwards, post-mortem, just write the story, let it stand. We don't need to hear...
I didn't need to know the caveat that she doesn't agree with the views. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Maybe she doesn't agree with the view that the Blitz defence is the best way to deal with Bristol. I don't know. I don't need to hear about... Just report the story. But yeah, I kind of see that. But yeah, absolutely nothing wrong. It was a good story. It's exactly what you should cover. Yeah. If a rugby player says to you, I'm not taking the vaccine, and these are the reasons. Okay, fine. So all very, very, very bizarre.
There are two things which are ridiculous. One, any suggestion that he shouldn't offer an opinion, either if asked or because he wants to.
So
ridiculous.
I'm not sure about that.
Why?
Why? I mean, I just don't feel the need to know what he thinks.
So I'm quite...
I mean, he can do it if he wants.
Yeah, I would strongly advise him, if I was on his side, just keep your thoughts to yourself. Your life will be much better and much easier if you don't put this out there.
When he walks into the press conference holding the Andrew Wakefield biography, I would go, hang on a minute, Henry. What have you been reading here? No vaccine chat.
You read the whole article, right?
Yeah.
I thought his reasoning was like...
I still don't want to hear it.
Absolutely sound.
Yeah, fine. But like, I don't want to hear their thoughts on Black Lives Matter. I don't want to hear their thoughts on mental health. I don't want to hear their thoughts on any of it. I just want to know about the rugby.
Yeah, you don't want to. But if you were confronted with it, you would just, as quickly as you'd read it, you would discard it, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But I would strongly advise him not to mention anything about it because... Yeah. You can see what is going to happen.
What I'm saying is I don't want to know about the latest cause that a player has, whether it be vaccines, whether it be something else. I don't want to know about it. I'm not interested. Yeah, and
if they want to become the next Greta.
Yeah. Like,
that's fine.
Just
but
couldn't
the point,
care.
Point being, it is, but there was two things which were said often, apart from, I'm just going to ignore the people that said ridiculous things because they're not even worth the hot air it would take to talk about them. But the two things which were said, which I totally disagree with as well, is one, that he shouldn't offer an opinion. Yeah, you can advise him not to, but, you know, he can say what the hell he wants.
He can. Yeah.
And second, and that's fine. And if you think it's wrong, ridiculous, bad move, you can just ignore it.
Yeah.
The second one is people suggesting that the Telegraph were irresponsible to report on it. that is equally absolutely insane. And those two things that I've just described, that's how China operate. That's how Russia operate. Mm.
Yeah.
Go and see how you get on over there.
Yeah. My only point on it is like, I just don't want to hear. I don't want to hear their latest cause. Do you not feel that sometimes that sports players in general are just trying to build a profile around themselves? And I get it. It's a short career, and then you need to do something else afterwards and need some sort of spotlight on you and to be known for something. But they're using a cause to build a personality or build a profile or whatever it may be. And I just don't need to hear it. And that includes talking about vaccines.
Yeah, I do get that perspective. I don't necessarily think that's what Henry Slade was trying to do.
What was he trying to do, yeah, actually?
I'm not actually sure what he was trying to do. I still find it a bit weird. Entitled to his opinion. And I do quite strongly think that he's a professional rugby player. He's paid to look after his body. If he deems one thing, he makes a decision like that, it's his call.
Yeah.
Not the decision that have made or would make.
My last thing on this, right, because it is fundamentally unimportant, if you feel really strongly about vaccines, right, and you're really, really pro-vaccine, as most people should be, actually, and you want to waste energy, don't waste it on Henry Slade, because it's pointless. Waste it on the person who's not had the vaccine, who is close to you, and is reluctant for some reason, and prove to them, not with shame, but just with some simple facts, that it works, and then we can all move on with our life, and we don't need to worry about Henry Slade's stance on vaccines ever again.
Yes,
if you care about that person or whatever, or if you wish to, or you could equally just leave adults to
do nothing.
To make up their own mind about all manner of things.
Yes, or do nothing. Yeah,
yeah.
I'm open to both options for record. Those are the two tangential things. I want to talk about some rugby again.
Yes, please.
I just realized before we get into it, I made a recommendation of another podcast if you have more time in your... And I didn't mention what the podcast was. Rugby Run to Banter, that Eddie Stevens one. I just said his name.
Oh, there you go.
Anyway. What's an update on the North Dorset Sevens, James?
I'm glad you asked. So we now have Captain Lee on the case. So if you have submitted your CV, which many people have... he will be getting back to you, and
to play in our Sevens social side or our Vets 10 side.
Yes, and we are still looking for players. Send in your CVs. It is what date, Tim? Put it on the spot.
23rd, 24th, 25th of July, that weekend, which is the weekend of the first Lions test against South Africa, which will be played in the clubhouse at Gillingham Rugby Club, where the North Dorset Sevens are happening that weekend. And over the same weekend, there will be a Friday night event. I think there's camping and stuff in the
grounds
and all the rest of it. So there'll be plenty of drinks being had, plenty of fun being had, a live Egg Chasers podcast, and a various Sevens tournaments to either watch, play in if you want to come and be in our team, or bring your own club along or whatever. And Gillingham in Dorset. And yes.
So Sevens players and over 35s, we want you. It's basically camp, play, sleep, repeat. 3 days.
Drink was probably
drink.
Refresh.
Camp, camp, play, part of that. Drink, repeat.
Yeah, rehydrate.
Yes,
rehydrate.
Rehydrate. Quite right. And just, you said send your CV in. I mean, that might make it sound like you have got to do more effort than you have. Just bob us an email.
Yeah, just send us an email.
Contact eggchasers@gmail.com.
Tim, personal question for you, mate. What's your Merv time?
I haven't done an actual full scale unscaled Murph before.
It's a scandal.
I've never done one. 100 pull-ups is it would just take me too long.
Are you doing all the pull-ups in one go?
Yeah, I pure Murph.
Yeah,
not a cheap Murph.
Yeah, so I did a cheap Murph today, so I could. So in case anyone's wondering what this is. Of course it's CrossFit. Of course it's Memorial Bank Holiday in America. So everyone has to do Murph, which is a WOD. Yeah, so...
Named after, I can't remember what the first name was, but a soldier, Murphy, who died and was a particularly...
Good soldier?
Heroic, particularly good soldier, heroic guy, selfless acts, which mean that particularly...
Which means...
He has the pinnacle of workouts that are named after soldiers, and it's the one that they do every Memorial Day.
It took me 48 minutes.
That's good going, mate.
Which is a good time.
It's 3 minutes. I got beaten by at least two men in their 50s. So that's who's going to play for us.
Yeah.
Those boys, the Jans were staring me in the face.
How many press-ups were you doing in a minute by the end of the 200 press-ups?
10.
So
I was doing
them in ones?
Yeah. No. So I'd go five pull-ups, five press-ups, 15
Oh, I see.
15, do that 20 times, I think. Is that right? Yeah, yeah, 20 times. And then you mile before, you mile after.
Got ya.
But you say, not a cheap one. To do it properly, you need a 10K weight vest.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Forget that.
Yeah. No, I ate a Battenberg cake.
Oh, what was your time?
Yeah, exactly. I've done the opposite of Murph today, to be honest. All I've seen is the pictures on the group for my CrossFit box and them all doing it in the bright sunshine. And
Yeah.
Made me feel quite guilty about the day I've had.
Oh, dear. Oh, dear. Right. Rugby. Who watched the Bath game?
Not me. I've only seen the highlights of that.
Okay, so we'll get this out of the way.
Did Bath take a lead and then get pumped?
No, they didn't.
What?
They did get pumped, and they did take a lead, but they didn't take the lead to start with. So before we get into it, is there anything Stuart Hoopery that you'd like to get off your chest? Have you got any more excuses for him?
No, all I've ever said, I haven't said that there aren't issues that Bath need to solve. I think they need to get a defence coach because Neil Hatley is doing that job as well as being coach of various other things. And fair play to the guy. He's got a big old job he's covering there, but they need a defence coach and they're getting a new attack coach. That's a big chunk of the issues at Bath because there's no connection between the different areas of their game. And I think the lack of coaching they have in those roles is what we're seeing.
I found out something fascinating the other day. Do you know that the Bath number nines get private coaching? They pay for their own coach.
I did not know that.
Yeah, interesting, eh?
Why?
Because they do. There's not a Bath nine coach or halfback coach, so the guy comes in and does that for them, which they pay.
I know various players in the past have paid for various different specialists. Coaches like Danny Cipriani,
yeah,
for his breathing coach.
I don't necessarily think that's a knock on Bath either.
No,
you've only got like a certain amount of time in your day.
Oh yeah, yeah. You know. Haskell paid for various different coaches as well. Mike Brown and others used to pay for various sprint coaches. So I don't necessarily think it's not unusual as well to have outside coaching help for those players who take their game really seriously.
Yeah, I just thought it was an interesting bit. But here's why I want to talk about Bath this week. Why is nobody talking about Max Ojomo being the future of English rugby? That guy is flipping incredible.
He had a few nice touches in this game.
Oh my word! Like, yeah. if that was Redpath, if that was Cipriani, we'd be going mental about it.
Redpath as well. The news this week.
Yeah, not good. I don't know. How serious is it?
ACL.
Yeah, he will not play against this year. Ugh. So it's 2022 before he plays again.
Dreadful news.
But is it his third serious knee injury?
Definitely the second.
Which, second or third, but that makes it even worse. The fact that it's multiple injuries to the same. And knees are, in terms of all of the joints, the complexity of a knee is... just about the worst thing to have multiple injuries on.
So I don't know if it's the same knee, I don't know if it's a different knee. It reminded me, I said this on a video last week, but it reminds me of when he was away at England for Sale, whichever way we're at on that goes, and he had a knee injury. And it was initially reported as, oh yeah, it's not too bad, and it got worse and worse and worse and worse. Like, oh, we didn't see him again for 18 months.
Mm.
But
Max Ojomo.
Tell you what, this kid's amazing. I mean, I really think that. I was watching... just the way he distributes the ball, the way he picks his passes, he can challenge the gain line. I just can't believe I can't believe he's not all over the back pages.
And he's only 20.
Yeah. What a player.
21 this year. Now, I've obviously seen the highlights of this game. I've not seen any enormous amount of him before this.
I remember...
Which does raise its own questions, I guess. Why?
Like a Premiership Cup type thing, he's been regularly featuring in that.
Yeah, I saw him a few weeks ago.
Anglo Welsh, whatever it was, for a few years now.
Yeah, I saw him a few weeks ago. I can't remember if he started off the bench, but he didn't play like that. I didn't think, oh yeah, I must see more of him.
Wouldn't it be good if we managed to engineer it so he had a really strong Championship League that he could have had a couple of years playing some real quality rugby in?
There's no way Max Ojomo is playing at 19 for bloody Ealing. He might do, I guess. But no. Someone, if it's not Bath, if he's on an academy contract now, someone should go and buy him out of that contract. Just exactly the same as Bath did with Redpath.
With Redpath.
Go and pay him some money. Go get him. I think he's a bloody brilliant player.
And get him playing rugby. Get him starting. Get him reading the game. Get him distributing.
Do you know who he reminded me of?
Eastmond?
Correct. Yeah. Correct. Exactly like Eastmond. I mean, that pass between him and Marcus Smith.
For the Will Muir try down the left wing.
Who's another one who I've been thinking about. Mm. He must be part Scottish somewhere.
He should fall into my... So I'd have a rule where even if you're not... So if you're called Hamish Watson, but both your parents are... And all your grandparents are Japanese, if you're called Hamish Watson, you can play for Scotland.
Exactly.
I love it.
Matters not.
It. Yeah, exactly.
Tom O'Flaherty would have had 20 caps for Ireland by now. Should have had 20 caps for Ireland
Tom O'Flaherty is definitely Irish.
Irish. If you're called Faf du Plessis, where, no matter where you were born and raised, you can play for South Africa.
Well, Van der Fleer. Should be playing for
Josh Van der Fleer.
Van der Fleer, yeah.
100%.
That only works. Almost you should be precluded from playing from another country if your name doesn't sound enough like that as well.
Exactly.
Or if it sounds too much like a different country. Yeah. And I suppose the good thing this would have to be stopped, because this would just be another way that New Zealand would absorb resources. Not only do they get all the Pacific Island players, but they'd get all the Scottish players as well.
Yeah.
So just watching this game, I thought actually both teams went at it pretty hard. Some of the Bath tackling was woeful. I think that's what you were saying before, was not, Tim? They need a defence coach.
Neil Hatley is their defence coach, and it's not going to work.
Yeah. Mm. So I agree with that. Both teams seem to be kind of defence optional, which I'm not massively a fan of. But some of the rugby on display, some of the skills and some of the tries, they looked absolutely flipping fantastic.
There were elements, in the bits I saw, there were elements of this where I thought Quinns looked bad.
A little warning
for playoffs. Like you cannot be this loose.
They are loose, aren't they?
You can't defend like that in the against the teams, the other teams who are in the playoffs, because it's all confirmed now. You cannot defend like that. You will get hammered if you defend like that.
Yeah, and as for Quinns, they're interesting because they're loose. There's no two ways about that. That's just how they play, though. And have I got this right? Did they beat Sale? I think they gave Sale a bit of a hiding.
I can't remember. So they beat them early in the season.
Yeah, I always seem to think they beat Sale when they play at the Stoop. I think they've got Sale's number in a lot of ways. Mm. And
they're not going to meet in a semi, are they?
No.
No.
But where else could they meet?
In the final.
So I think Sale can win whichever semi that they go into. I think that is now...
It's possible.
Yeah. I think it's going to be away at Exeter. Yes, they can win.
It's possible, but
I don't think they will win. One in five.
I'd give them to go away.
Two in five.
Exeter have never lost a playoff match.
Never played Sale in a playoff, to be fair.
Yeah, Sale's first playoff since 2005-06, is it?
I think it is. Yeah.
Yeah, it is.
I think it is.
They won it the last time Sale made the playoffs, they won.
So I was thinking when Sale got confirmed players for the first time, I was just thinking about the thing I mentioned the other week about Diamond being to Sanderson as Lancaster is to Eddie Jones. That this performance, this team is built on they have got there because of the work that Diamond did.
100%.
But equally, they would not have got there if Diamond was still the coach.
So Alex Sanderson is the stud, and Steve Diamond is like the fluffer effectively.
Basically.
That's how you do horse breeding, isn't it?
Can I be absolutely 100% categorical on this? I made none of those analogies. No. I don't believe it. In any of them.
No, I'm just... So it is
nothing so to do with your filth,
isn't it the case that how horses breed?
It may well be.
They have one horse who just gets the mare all excited, and then they just bring the stud in to finish the job.
Not my views. So, Harlequins have come very close to beating both Bristol and Exeter. And I think they could quite easily win their semi too.
It's possible. Do we think that the way the table lines up as it is right now, i.e. Bristol, Exeter, Sale, Quins, that is going to be how it lands at the end.
I think so, yeah. I think so.
Yeah.
I think so. There is, I mean, anyone can jump around. No, Quins.
Exeter are 3 points behind Bristol and can get top still.
They can. Mathematically, Sale could get top, albeit they won't. Harlequins just can't get top. But it could all change around, but I can't see it. I can't see Exeter and Bristol losing to the point where things will change. Yeah.
So it's quite cool, this, because Bristol Harlequins will be utter madness. It'll be insanity.
Yeah.
Well, you said that you thought Sale Bristol on Friday was the best Premiership game you've seen.
I think so, yeah.
Bristol Quins game was amazing as well, a month or so ago.
In a different way, though.
I think what sets the
Sale game apart was the physicality and the nil, the quality of a 0-0 at half time. I've never seen that. Whereas I've seen lots of high scoring, very, very good Premiership games.
And you've seen a few 6-3s as well, haven't you?
Oh, God, yeah. So, that'll be madness. And then Sale Exeter will be, well, madness of a different type.
Yeah, that will be. It is the
great style matchups.
Styles make matchups. That would be the perfect combo, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Bristol Quins and then Exeter Sale.
Yeah, whoever. What do I think? I don't even know what I think. I'm too excited.
Well, let's hold it for a few more. We've got a few more weeks until we have to start worrying about that.
Yeah.
I watched another live game this week.
Oh, which one?
Northampton Wasps.
Oh, brilliant.
That was an interesting game. And Wasps will be frustrated. And I say this for a couple of reasons. So in the last, I don't know if you've seen any of it, but in the last 10 minutes, Northampton's winning try by Tom Wood, there was a knock-on by David Ribbons, and it didn't get picked up by the referee. So a try that stood, which put Northampton 10 points ahead, should not have stood.
Yep.
Wasps then come back, they score their try, don't convert it because there was like 10 seconds left for them to take the conversion and then get playing again. So they drop goal the conversion. They receive the kickoff and they start playing. Charlie Atkinson breaks the line from his own 22 and they've got to score a converted try to win the game. And he gets high tackled by David Ribbons and it doesn't get picked up. So there was two. And I thought the referee actually handled most of the game pretty well, particularly when he's got Dan Bigger kind of screaming in his ear for half of it. But there's two issues, refereeing errors, I would call them, in the last few minutes that could have saved Wasps. Now, the flip side of that is, as we always say, don't leave it up to the referees.
Exactly.
And the first 2 minutes, Wasps, they lost themselves the game in the first 2 minutes by giving away two consecutive penalties and then basically not defending a driving maul from Northampton. So Northampton was 7-0 up before Wasps even started playing, and that's why Wasps shouldn't be complaining about those two refereeing decisions, because they allowed themselves to be in that position.
Completely agree. So Wasps have done some good business this week, in my opinion. Do you know about the Wasps business this week, Tim?
No.
So nothing earth-shattering. Nigel de Jong is going back to... Nigel de Jong. It's not Nigel de Jong. He's a footballer.
Juan de Jong
is going back to Stormers or Sharks.
Yeah.
I think Stormers, which I think is good because I like him. He's a good player, but maybe a touch expensive, bearing in mind when he was signed and all the rest of it. They've re-signed Charlie Atkinson. Now, this is really interesting because he played 15 this weekend, but he's a 10. And people whose opinion on rugby I respect enormously love this guy.
I really rate Charlie Atkinson. It's to point where I think...
Yeah, it's not you, mate. It's not you.
Yeah, I know. I know you don't respect my opinion.
Yeah.
But he's. I think he's got more potential than Umaga. I think he's got more talent.
Well, this is it, right? So Atkinson's playing at 15, and he does seem to have a little bit more flexibility than Umaga. If he decides to play 10, what does Umaga do? Because he doesn't seem to have that much flexibility at all, really. You wouldn't... I mean, maybe he can play 15. You wouldn't fancy him at 12 or 13, would you?
No. No. And he's very, definitely very talented, Umaga. But I think Atkinson's got the all-round game a bit better. Like that show and go, the turn of pace.
Yeah, I wonder...
Nice problem to have.
Yeah, is
the,
it?
The two young, talented players.
But what about for the players? Who? What do you do if you... I mean, the only time I can think of this similar situation would be Burns, Priestland, and actually Burns and Williams. Burns and Williams is probably more like it. But roughly the same age, young, up-and-coming players.
Yeah, the difference here is these two are, what, 20 and 21 or 21 and 22? These are not like Priestland and Burns when they were playing there. They were...
Priestland and Williams, though, were about 21.
Priestland Williams...
Owen Williams. Leicester.
Priestland and Williams.
Priestland and Williams, sorry. Burns and Williams.
Burns and Williams.
Burns signed at 21, 22 from Gloucester.
Maybe a little bit older, but yeah, okay.
So I just think, I mean, I wonder if you can have two number one tens. Not sure you can.
You need a number, but you can use the rivalry in the competition to drive the performance of both of them, but you do need the number one.
Yeah. It's a shame they can't sell one. I mean, like, genuinely, because they're worth money. Mm-hmm. And Wasps need some money.
Yeah. Yeah. But that's, well, how much money are they worth? Because rugby players are not. There are they're incredibly few transfers.
I think there's an actual amount, like a formula somewhere. It could be like,
yeah, well,
you have to pay out the rest of their contract or something.
But there was, because there was the Johnny May when he went to Leicester.
I was going to say, that's what happened with Johnny May.
Yeah, but that has now been changed, because there was something where you could just buy him out for the rest of his contract, I think was the old law. So you could pay... Let's say he's got 6 months left and he's on 100 grand a year. You just pay 50 grand and you've got yourself a new player.
So I'm pretty certain, right?
But I think it has changed.
Yeah, I'm pretty certain that Sale got six figures for Cameron Path.
Wow.
I'm certain of that.
Yeah.
I mean, I could be talking nonsense, but I'm certain of that nonsense.
How much did Sale pay out for Denny Solomona?
Ah, well, that's another interesting one. I don't think they ended up paying anything.
Did they not?
No, because I think what probably happened is they just decided who was going to foot the bills for the legal costs, and everyone just walked away. Because when Denny Solomona came over from Rugby League...
He officially retired from Rugby League.
Yeah.
But then immediately started playing.
Like, and training.
Weeks. Yeah.
I mean, it was dodgy as hell, the way it looked.
Yeah, what he should have done is go and... be the commercial manager for
a farm,
large cattle farm in South Africa for 6 to 12 months, and then come and play for Sale.
Yeah, I don't know what obligation Sale have to a rugby league club. Well, none, I'd assume.
He's got a contract. There's an employment law contract. There is, presumably.
But you can walk out your job whenever you want, can't you?
Yeah, but most people are not on time-bound contracts. Denny Solomona's was a time-bound two-year contract or four-year contract. So someone effectively terminating that by performance during the middle of that contract should bring about damage.
Yeah,
so,
and it was just it was the way it looked like collusion and like looked like a way to evade.
It wasn't
done with honour. Yeah, let's be honest.
Yeah.
Whether it was legally acceptable or not, it was not done with any amount of honour.
Well, hang on, just think about this, right? If they wanted honour from the whole thing, just paid Denny Solomona more. I mean, that, you know, they obviously valued him at an amount which Sale thought, yeah, we can pay that. Well, an issue.
No, I just, how much damages? Legal, yeah, take it. Whether it's legal or not, if he could have legally walked away, it was dishonourable of Denny Solomona to sign a contract and then say, I'm retiring, but then immediately sign for another club. And it was dishonourable of Sale, if they encouraged him to pursue that action, to do that. It was just, that's just no honour. So, you know, whether it was legal or not is one question. Whether it was right and proper and sort of, you know, that's another question. The two don't have to be the same answer.
So I don't know how we got onto this. Oh yeah, selling Charlie Atkinson.
Yes, which we got on from the Northampton Wasps game, obviously.
Yeah. So I would buy Charlie Atkinson.
Yeah,
and I would also dishonourably go get Max Ajomu.
Yes. Okay. This is for Tok 8, right?
If I was in charge of a Premiership rugby club, those are the two guys that I'd be looking at right now.
Yeah, I like those two.
Tell you what,
I do more due diligence on a player than watching them once.
I've watched them twice.
Let's give them all the money.
Highlight reel one.
You need one game preferably 40 minutes. 40 good minutes, you go for it. I tell you what, though, if you're an England fan now, the amount of young talent which is starting to come through. I mean, Raffy Quirk, we didn't even talk about him.
Yeah.
Quirk.
Raffy de Quirk.
Raff de Quirk.
Yeah.
What does it say about that young man that they bought off Faf with, what, 30 to go?
Yeah, it was a long 30, time.
Yeah, I was like, what?
But that break, which led to the Randrandra yellow card, was amazing.
This is going to sound mental. I think Raffy Quirk is a better passer. I just think he is.
And Faffy.
Oh, my word, yeah. His passing is so crisp.
He's awesome. And he does look...
All right, let's move off Sale, though. Yeah. You're right, but let's move off Sale.
Well, I'm talking more about England Nines, because I think that has to be the future.
Here's a question that I've got for both of you. So, amazing to see Courtney Laws back.
Yes.
Played 65 minutes, played really well. Had some really useful interventions in the game. Now, my question is... So, Gatland appears to have selected all of the players who are primarily second rows but can play back row in Itoje, Laws, Hendo and Tyburn.
Yes.
If, say, and presumably he's done that so he can have size and additional line-out jumpers against that massive South African pack.
Yeah.
That all makes sense to me. Let's say a couple of those guys go down injured.
Uh-huh.
Who is the next cab off the rank that fits that mould? Because he selected them all.
Oh, Tom Croft.
Crofty.
Sam Skinner.
Skinner maybe, yeah. Skinner's not a bad shout, actually.
I think he goes a more traditional route. I think Launchbury gets a call. I think those lads start...
Launchbury's out injured, but Johnny Gray gets a call.
Yeah,
gets a call, or James Ryan gets a call. But if he wants to
Cruz? That's the guy I'd call in a
Cruz
heartbeat.
Yeah, Cruz is not a bad shout. But yeah, if he wants to stick, the three guys I could think of are George Martin.
Oh, yeah.
But I don't think he's ready for it.
Nope.
Brad Shields, but I don't think he's...
Good enough.
Yeah, I really like Brad Shields, but I don't think it would be quite right. The other one, who he might not be ready for it, but he's a hell of a player. I just wish he was getting more at club level, is Ted Hill.
Good shout.
Ted Hill is such a good athlete. He's such a good player. And for anyone to force their way into the England camp playing for this Worcester team, he's doing something right. And every time I watch him, he's got a great try this weekend. Yeah. He is such a good player.
What about Callum Chick? That would be, it's a long, long way from Newcastle to Lions. But that is,
he's not a six second row. He's an eight, but he's an eight. I think he'll be involved in an England squad.
He has to be. Well, yeah. He has to be. There's so many good people operating there.
There's not many good England eights. I don't think there is many good England eights. That's one position there isn't lots.
Yeah.
Yeah, but they seem to make do, don't they? Like Tom Curry turned out to be a fantastic England eight.
Tom Curry stepped up amazingly. But
Moore Wilson did very well.
Yeah. But Tom Curry is... The more I see of Tom Curry, and this weekend Ben Curry, the more I'm like, these guys are unbelievable. These guys are. I just can't get over. They're so good.
Why wouldn't you have both of them for England?
Yeah. I mean, Ben Curry, obviously, over the last 6 months or so, has had his bad injuries, but he's got to be getting a call.
That was his first start in, four or five months?
Yeah.
I've said this numerous times. I'll say it again. You ask a Sale player who the best player is that they play with, they'll go Ben Curry. They'll do without skipping a beat. And then you go, well, Tom. Oh, yeah, Tom's really good too, actually.
Tom's all right.
Yeah.
But Ben. Well, Ben got the call up first.
Yeah, and he got players player of the year.
He was going to be, and as I've said many times before, he was due to be starting that game on the tour in Argentina. The only reason Tom got elevated to the starting lineup from the bench was because Ben got injured.
Sliding doors, eh?
Yeah.
Yeah, but it really was.
You want both of them. You want to have the option to have both of them. Because for all the Underhill, all the Lewis Ludlam, Mark Wilson, they are all genuinely amazing players, but they're not a Curry.
No, they are bloody good.
Anyway, so yeah, that was my question in this game. This game was there's some good moments, but neither team played on top of their game. Dan Bigger, after I said he should not be playing this game, limped off with 10 minutes to go.
And has been cited for a potential illegal clear out.
Yeah, on Jacob Umaga.
And how did that look?
I don't think it would be a red card offence. It was a no arm, stiff arm on a rook clear out on a ruck where his arm did make contact with Umaga's head, but low force.
Yeah.
So I don't think he will get anything from that. But Bigger, I think he's an amazing player. He just needs to chill out at times. I was arguing, the ref made, I can't even remember, it was a call about changing the mark for a kick at goal or kick for the corner.
Mental.
And Bigger, 5 minutes after that, he was still arguing with the referee when play stops. Well, he was arguing with his own bench when they sent on a kicking tee. He just needs to... I mean, that is why he's so amazing, but...
That's what he says. He says about that side of his character, that's what keeps him on edge. It's almost like a deliberate thing. Like, that's how he keeps motivated.
I mean, it does... You can see it drives him, but he just needs to, like...
Chill out.
Take the edge off. Yeah. Because it does... Like, if he gets cited for this... And he could have got seen in the game for that... It could be different next time. He could actually clock someone properly and get a proper red card when it matters.
Are you saying that he needs to get on the line to save your world?
I was thinking more hot debriefs, actually.
Ah, yeah, hot debriefs.
Can you imagine? Like, I sort of, in reverse, I think quite often you can see your own kids and you can imagine the grown-up that they're going to be. I look at Dan Bigger as a grow-up and imagine the kid he was. Oh, that competitive and that edge.
Imagine playing Monopoly with a 10-year-old Dan Bigger.
That's exactly what I was going to say. I wonder how many times he flipped a board game board up in the air.
Flip the whole table, the kitchen table, up in the air.
Through the window, out the window.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
We've covered off everything, haven't we?
Leicester beat Worcester.
Saw that.
Ellis Genge looking great.
Yeah. Weak and Leicester team, understandably, after last week. But Worcester losing again. Worcester finding it impossible
just
to win.
Just by a point. Yeah, they just can't buy a win.
Exactly.
And Gloucester played London Irish. Well, a game that I guess Tim cares about, because your team.
Tim's team lost.
Well, I've got a soft spot for Irish, my boys. Yeah, I'm going to be going to the Brentford Stadium on Saturday.
Nice.
Very much looking forward to that.
Awesome. After Brentford got promoted as well to the Premier League.
Yeah. Just got to try and find somewhere to park a motorhome in West London. That should be fun.
The Brentford story I find really interesting. We're not going to go into the Brentford story, but just they are kind of moneyballing football.
Do you know they don't have an academy?
Yeah, they just buy their players in, don't they? But they've got scouts and talent recognition that they get by players who are being undervalued and underutilized, and then get the value. Like their striker this year, I think, scored 32 goals, and they picked him up for. And they did this with Ollie Watt. They've done it with.
Who is involved there? Someone who follows football knows this far better. But I was talking to one of the Pro 14 coaches about this, and he was saying it's not exactly as they make out, because they do put an awful lot of money into other things. They just don't think it's best spent in the academy. I can't remember who. Someone, who on earth was talking to me about? There's some so annoying. Someone was talking about some algorithm or something which they want to apply into rugby. So there's someone going around now trying to do this for a rugby club
and looking at stats, presumably looking at what are the stats that correlate with performance would be the area that you'd want to be looking at. I think.
How annoying! I can't remember. Anyway, there you go.
I could do one. There you go. Here's an algorithm: height, weight,
yeah,
100 meter time, deadlift number,
yeah.
A combine, yeah, get some good numbers on that. You've probably got yourself a decent rugby player.
Yeah,
true that.
It's interesting that, because like there's the height, for example, to be a second row. Height is a necessary condition, but not a sufficient condition. You have to be an international second row. You cannot be under 6'5".
No, we can't.
But there are lots of people who are over 6'5" who would be never get anywhere near a rugby field. Never mind getting near an international rugby field.
Yeah.
So it's then right. What else is there?
Very rare humans or second rows. Mm. Very rare.
Absolutely.
So Gloucester and Irish makes pretty much no difference to anyone, does it?
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too.
That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Top eight is Wasps at the moment, so Bath are out.
It is still, yeah, it's still competitive for those top eight slots. I mean, there's, I'd say most top weeks, eight. But there are several of those teams who probably shouldn't get top eight because they don't want to be going away.
As we're talking about top eight, I just have to say it again, it is absolutely awful. That top eight,
isn't
it?
It's just a joke.
It is dreadful.
Who's making the top eight this year? I mean, you mean who's not the worst four teams in the Premiership? An accolade!
Like the whole point. Do you remember when they rejigged the Champions Cup? The whole point. I remember them saying it, and they were absolute pains to say. It's about having an elite competition.
Yeah,
what they've just created is mediocrity within, baked into the Premier domestic rugby tournament in the world.
Yep. You're not wrong, mate. You're not wrong at all.
Would you, Ginny, where would you cut the line?
Top four.
Top four, 12 teams.
Yeah, I like four.
Far fewer games. Well, you could have, because if you could even do it, if you're genuinely worried about player welfare, don't make them play six pool games. Go straight to, as we said before, go straight to a knockout.
Top eight in a knockout would be interesting.
Or potentially, and this is one I floated a little while ago when they were talking about this, you could stick with top six, but then each pool is three teams, and it's one from the Premiership, one from top 14, one from the Mushroom Cup, and that's it. And you play four pool games, and then you go into the round of 16.
Yeah.
That would be a way to go.
Yeah.
So as we're on the Mushroom Cup, well, Benetton are doing the business.
Benetton still top of the league. They beat Connacht.
At some point, did the Pro 14 convene a meeting to say this is not what was meant to happen?
It was meant to be Leinster were meant to win another trophy.
Yeah. This was Leinster's competition from day one, and you've ruined it.
We must be on Mushrooms Cup at the minute.
This is genuinely the best thing that's happened to Italian rugby in years. As in, one of the things we've complained about for a long period of time is that the Italian teams, who do have some good young Italian talent, for example, Garbisi, who is a seriously talented playmaker fly half, they need to go and play in France to get any or England to get any competitive rugby. At Benetton are actually getting meaningful games now because this game against Connacht are no mugs. They're a great side. They've travelled to Benetton and Benetton have beat them.
Beat them up badly.
And that is good for, that's genuinely good for Benetton. It's also good for Italian rugby for their players to be getting that kind of experience. So I'm all for it. I think it's excellent. And I really hope Benetton go and do it. So they've got to travel to the Ospreys next week and win that game. I'm breathing down their necks and Munster. Munster and Glasgow Warriors. Munster have got to travel to Zebre, so Munster will be getting 5 points. Glasgow host Leinster, so Glasgow might not be getting 5 points from that.
So,
and what happens at the end of
it? Yeah, what does happen at the end?
So it was at a point in time talked about being the Rainbow Cup North plays the Rainbow Cup South. Now, I'm not actually sure what hang on. Here we go. Yes, it's confirmed. First place team from each tournament will play each other in the final, which will be played in Treviso, Italy.
Really?
On the 19th of June.
Well, what colour list is that on?
To whom?
Good question.
To the South African government.
Yeah.
I have no idea.
To us, I guess.
To us. I don't know. Northern Italy, they were hit hard first. So it should
be fine by now.
Fine. Herd immunity.
So this is interesting. So that means that the first place team in the league are going to play the South African team. There's no inter-league playoff, no?
No, I think it's just one game.
Wow.
Let's be honest. It's going to be a game. One team's going to win and then no one will ever speak of it ever again.
It will be in about 8 years' time. one of my quizzes will be who won the Rainbow Cup in 2011.
Yeah, we like watching... You know,
2021 even.
The old videos of like weird teams that no longer exist, like when the English unions decided to regionalise for 5 minutes, and, you know, the South West playing in green or whatever it was.
That was a long-standing thing.
Was it really?
Yeah.
I did not know that.
It was part of the sort of county setup. You'd play for your county, and then you play in the county championship. Then you get selected for your region, and that would be your how you progress towards England trials, which might even be how it's still done at schoolboy level, but that's how it was done right up to the top level.
So I remember Mike Catt playing in this nice green outfit.
Green shirt. I've worn that South West shirt. Green shirt with yellow collar.
That's the one, yeah. It looked awesome. So, yeah, that's how I'll remember it.
Right. Anything else to cover this week?
Rainbow
I can't think of anything.
Henry Slade.
Dave he was Walder. So good, by the way. Oh, my God. What a player.
Yeah.
What a player. What a bloke. What a player. What a guy. Love him.
He was, in my opinion, unlucky to not get a Lions call up.
And on the strength of that, he just did some things that were just outrageous in that match.
Yeah. If it was a different coach, Gatlin obviously likes the kind of more direct physical style. Different coach, he probably would be a Lion.
He would struggle to travel.
No, he wouldn't.
Yeah,
he said in the post match interview. I don't know where this has come from.
Well, just him
because the just because the Lions players had a vaccination this week. Nowhere has it been written that you're not allowed to travel without a vaccination. I don't understand this because Henry Slade said in his post-match interview, he said, "I don't wish injury on anyone, but I just want to play well so that I'm ready in case there is an injury." And some smart asses have said things like, "Well, you're not allowed to travel if you don't get back." That's just not true.
Hmm. True. Okay. So,
clearly you didn't think so.
There's a joke, Tim.
Oh, right. Sorry.
Right.
I apologise. I've been fielding loads of bell ends on Twitter.
Fielding bell ends.
Twitter.
My favourite type of cricket. I think we've done everything. Last appeal for players. Tens. Over 35s. No less than 5 caps. Is that? I think that's fine.
Yeah.
Five international caps.
For tier
two I can do a job
above.
At 10.
Yeah. Exactly. So we won't want ex-internationals primarily, but we will also take you because we need players.
Mike Catt, that'd be a good shout. You mentioned him. Mike Catt.
Mike Catt could probably still do a job at 10-12, couldn't he?
Probably. Oh, hang on. There was a debate about the England team. There was an all-time England team out this week.
Oh, yeah. Who picked it? Was it Elliot Daly and someone else?
No, I don't know.
It was Ugo and a couple of other people. I can't remember what it
was.
That's
right, yeah. So that
was
came
it BT
out.
Sport thing?
Yeah, so that came out earlier on this week. And nobody mentions Mike Catt as one of England's great 12s. I think he is a great 12. Does anyone disagree with that?
I think he is, but in the great teams, he was... in the great team, he was the... Off the bench, he was the cover, wasn't he? He was like the
he was on the bench, and he actually didn't play that many games at 12.
Okay, so a few bits.
He was 10. He was 10 and 15.
So
and a bit of 12.
I think you're wrong here, Tim. I think he played far more games at 12 than he played all the other positions combined. So he played 14 notoriously when he got run over.
Run over in 1995. By
yep.
I seem to remember him being a fullback and a fly half, mate.
He's done a bit of fullback, done a bit of fly half, but he is primarily. If you look at the positions where he played, I am 100% positive he'll have more starts at 12 than every other position that he's played combined.
So he was.
Now, the reason that he didn't start the World Cup was because he was injured for about 18 months before the World Cup, from what I remember. And they picked him.
And also, Mike Tindall and Will Greenwood were quite good.
Well, he just wasn't around to compete. So, you know. Yeah, they are good. There's no truth about it. He got bought into the England squad on the back of one friendly against Caerphilly, I think, for Bath and something else. So he comes into squad. And without him, I don't think that England would have beaten Wales.
So he went to 4 World Cups, didn't he?
Did he really?
Because he got run over in 95.
Yeah.
I assume he played in 99, unless he was injured. He was on the bench in 2003, and he was in at 36 the 2007.
Yes.
Was he?
Squad. Yes, because he did play 10. So Ollie Barkley played 10.
Floody.
Farrell was Floody
was supposed to...
Farrell was due to start at 10, and then they changed it to Mike Catt.
But Barkley, Wilkinson, Flood, Mike Catt.
What a mess that team was, and they made the final.
They did make the final. So did Catt start then? Because
he started one game.
Did he start in the final?
No, Wilkinson started at the final.
I'm thinking at 12. Who started it? Because Matt Tate started at 13 in the final.
Farrell started.
No, Farrell didn't start in
Farrell
the final.
Farrell started.
Andy Farrell.
When?
Andy Farrell.
In the 2007 World Cup final.
Yeah.
No way.
No, he didn't start fly half. What are you talking about?
No, centre, you're saying.
Centre.
2007 World Cup final. No way did Farrell start.
Quite all.
You're getting confused with England Wales. Sam Burgess just starting in the centre.
No, I'm not.
Much details. Starting at 12 in the World Cup final, 20th October 2007.
Ollie Barkley.
Mike Catt.
Ah, there you are then.
And he came off on 51 minutes for...
Ollie Barkley.
No.
Andy Farrell.
How about... Dan Hipkiss or something like that.
Dan Hipkiss was on the bench.
Nice.
Dan Hipkiss came off and... Dan Hipkiss replaced Jason Robinson in that game.
He's over 35.
What about... was it?
Toby Flood came on for Mike Catt.
So there was a walk up.
Flood.
There was a walk up with Catt, Flood, Wilkinson...
Yes.
Farrell.
Yes.
And Barkley.
Yes.
That's insane.
Yes. And, of course, the playmaking centres, Dan Hipkiss and Jamie Noon.
Yeah, of course, of course. Yes. Well, I mean, they had to calm it down somehow.
But just think, that 2003, when you think about the 2003 squad, the one person that no one will ever remember, but who has a World Cup medal, is Stuart Abbott.
I think Stuart Abbott regularly.
Well, yeah.
Ex-Quins at ex-Wasps. Bloody good player.
Really good player. Obviously, World Cup winner.
Was it not a tib-fib break which ruined his career? Well, nee. It doesn't matter, does it?
At this point,
I love it. Like quite right. This is what I love about you, Jay. This is what I love about this podcast. Is I make a point, which I think is probably a fair one, is that no one ever remembers Stuart Abbott. And you say, you know Stuart Abbott to the degree that you're wondering which bone he broke in a specific injury.
Yeah, he had a horrible injury, and that just ended him.
Well, I'm just having a quick look at that. Breaking his right leg in Wasps 18-15 Heineken Cup defeat by Biarritz.
I don't think he came back from that.
That was in 2005.
Christ, I was watching videos of The Rock today from 2003, and I realised it was nearly 20 years ago. How depressing. Right, that's enough of that.
Yep.
So, CVs, sevens, if you're over 35, for tens, Dorset sevens, yada, yada, yada. Go find us on YouTube. We are doing videos all this week. And, yeah, let the boys play.
No predictions?
No predictions? Oh, God, yeah. Shall we do...
Yeah, rattle through the games this weekend, Phil. Come on.
Very quick predictions. Friday night lights. We've got Sale versus Harlequins.
At the AJ Bell.
At the AJ Bell.
Sale.
Saturday, we have Gloucester versus Bath.
Gloucester.
Bath have to win that one, surely.
Gloucester.
Give me Bath.
Where are they?
At King's Home.
Definitely Gloucester.
Give me Bath.
I'm going Bath.
Then we've got Tigers hosting Bristol.
Bristol.
Bristol want to get back on the horse.
Bristol.
We've got Falcons hosting Worcester Warriors.
Falcons.
Falcons, they've rested their team. Falcons will win that. Irish hosting Wasps.
Irish.
Irish.
Give me... Wasps, if they could have won that game. Give me Wasps.
There you go.
And then we have Northampton hosting Exeter, which is going to be Chiefs.
But they're going to be at the Gardens.
At the Gardens.
It's going to be Chiefs.
Chiefs.
It's going to be Chiefs.
Right, definitely.
Just one little thing. Maybe we can pick this up in a future conversation, but I forgot to mention today. Rob Baxter said in the week, and I thought it was quite interesting, whilst everyone's been getting very excited that fans are back in stadiums and it does make such a massive difference, Rob Baxter, I think quite rightly, has said he's very, very concerned that there appears to be no plan, whether that's from the sport or whether that's from governance. There seems to be no plan or even conversation about returning to full crowds. And it brought into stark contrast when I was watching the Indianapolis 500. I wasn't watching it, but I saw some pictures from the Indy 500 over the weekend. And you watch all the sporting events that are going on in baseball grounds and stuff in Texas and in Florida. They are absolutely packed. And there is absolutely no plan in place or being spoken about for getting full crowds at rugby. And the conversation needs to happen because these clubs cannot keep going.
Well, we don't need to have the conversation yet, do we? Because we've got the off season, we can get through this. We can get through the 26th of whatever it is reopening.
Clubs need to plan, don't they? So I think conversations are needed. So anyway, we can talk about it in a future pod. I just thought I'd put a little pin in it because Rob Baxter mentioned it this week.
Yeah, let's talk about it later. I just assumed, perhaps naively, that all restrictions were lifting from the 21st.
That's
of June.
That's exactly what I assumed.
As in, from the 22nd of June.
Let's not get started because I will start getting really angry talking about that, because that's absolutely how it should be. And it's ridiculous if that is not the case. But
go and tweet your pandemic thoughts to @Cocker.
And all right. Tim, you go and enjoy your holiday.
Yeah, enjoy yourself, mate. Don't have too much. Oh, no, actually, have too much cider. You're on holiday.
Exactly.
Have as much cider as you want.
Yes.
Right. Let the boys play.
Let the boys play.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.